Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Health Blast Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher of Alternative Medicine and Wellness Radio. It is going to be a great year, 2015. We are going to have several of our guests who are inspirational, telling their stories, sharing a lot of their tips about how to live a holistic life and love it. We all have all kinds of challenges these days, and we say we'll try things. We don't get the greatest results, or sometimes it's just mediocre. But we're going to learn to love a holistic life. Isn't that great? We're going to learn that it's great to get up in the morning. It's fabulous if it rains, and it's absolutely incredible that we have these challenges and all of the things we can learn from that. And isn't life just a roller coaster? So thank you so much for joining us. Please check us out on Health Blast Radio on Facebook, and also Health Blast 2015 on Twitter. Also our website, drjeanettegallagher.com, for more information. We also have a women over the age of 50 group starting February 1st, which will be sharing a lot of information about how to help us and ourselves. As we are women, we are also caregivers. We are also part of this world that will be bringing more compassion and empathy towards others. Please do join, and please do check it out on our website, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. And now, back to the show. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Health and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. We are going to be talking about something really great. And I think it's something that'll be coming up in the new year. So we are live on Sedona Talk Radio today, Blog Talk Radio, and also on iTunes. Please do check out this show. We're going to be talking about eco-friendly. Big words, you know, this green living and everything. But we'll be talking about that subject today with my guest, and her book is All You Need Is Less. Her name is Madeline Somerville. And if you'd like, please do listen to a few minutes or so, and if you have to go, you can always come back. Our shows are archived on Sedona Talk Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and iTunes for 6 months to a year. Please do listen, check out some of the other shows, and feel free to post some comments. So today, as I said, we're going to be talking about eco-friendly and green living. You know, it seems to be a buzzword, a tag word these past few, years. And I don't think it's been probably in the mainstream until the last 4 or 5 years. And it depends how you were raised. It depends what your parents would be doing. It depends where you live. I live in the Deep South. Do you think that they worry about throwing trash out their window? Absolutely not. But when I lived in Arizona, it was a fine if you did something like that. Then I think back on the times we lived in Pennsylvania. You know, people would always say you couldn't wait till the snow would melt because then you'd have to clean up your yard of all the trash that got thrown out or blown around or whatever, and you'd be constantly doing things like that. Yet when you live in California, again, too, that's not something they do, is throw anything out their window because they have to think about the risk of, you know, fires or getting a fine or, hey, that's just not something you do. So some areas respect the earth. Some areas respect ways things are done, what you'd like to live around. And also they're respecting their body. Now, this is a new concept for a lot of people, is that they think about, why, gosh, what is that laundry detergent made out of? What is that stuff that I'm putting in the kitchen counters? You know, am I spraying it and then putting my food on the counter? Or what is on my dryer sheet? You know, I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and I'll tell you, we never had all that frilly stuff. We just didn't even think about it. It just didn't enter our mind. But, of course, in the 80s and 90s, you know, pop this pod, you know, put in this sheet, or you could spray this and your world would be glorious, you know. Women didn't have to wear aprons all day long, and they didn't have to think about cleaning their house, and it would take 2 or 3 days. You could just do it in 5 minutes or less. That seemed to be their tagline. So today we're going to be talking about how have we come full circle. and is it important or not? Because I really believe it is important. You know, kids could come over to my house and they could be under all of my cupboards. I used to let my kids just meander around the house. They can go under the cupboards. It didn't matter because I didn't need to childproof all these areas. I didn't have chemicals. They weren't there. But you can go in some people's houses now and they'll chemicals will be just right on the countertop, by the sink, you know, in the bathroom, underneath. Everywhere you look, there's a bottle of this and a box of that. So my guest today is Madeline Somerville. Her book is All You Need Is Less, The Eco-Friendly Guide to Guilt-Free Green Living and Stress-Free Simplicity. So I think she's kind of going to bring us back around. And she is much younger, so that's kind of good because, you know, they're the ones that need to really pay attention to this too. Maybe their parents didn't bring them up that way. Some people did, some people didn't. And it's just about the idea of if you have small children in the house, or as I always say to my clients, is if you're of reproductive years, you best be paying attention to what's in your environment around you. So, Madeline, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Jeanette. Thanks so much for having me.
And don't you think it's a real change? It's you're young enough, you may not have seen the change, but through history, there's been a lot of change about the way we do things anymore.
Absolutely. And it was such, you summed it up so well. And this is what I sort of tell people when I'm talking about eco-friendly living. And sometimes it seems like it's so overwhelming and bewildering to give up things like dryer sheets or plastic wrap. And it's like, what would we do without them? But we didn't have them. You grew up without them. Our grandmas didn't have them. They still preserved their food. Everything still stayed fresh and clean. And I mean, there was a time before these things, and there's definitely ways to get around without them. And I don't feel the lack of them. So yeah, everything old is becoming new again as we're realizing the impact of these solutions that we've created, and realizing that, you know, all these time savers have kind of created other problems too, because you spray this, you know, this magic spray on your shower and you just leave it and then you can rinse it off, but it also is super toxic if anyone in your house gets into it, and it can irritate your hands or your lungs. Like, we really sort of sacrifice a lot when we're asking our cleaners to take on that responsibility so that we don't have to scrub, or, you know, we're sort of outsourcing these tasks.
And I think a lot, too, is come over the years is what was good, we can make it better. What's better, we can make it best. And what's best, we can always come up with that, you know. What I call that neon green in the sky superpower, you know, everybody is into that, you know, where what can be better, 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 better. And sometimes better is not always better. And, you know, just the idea of we don't always have to come up with something new. Combination drugs, you know, you look at that, pharmaceuticals, you know, they'll give you one drug and they'll say, oh, wait, the permit's going to be running out, so we're going to give you a combination one. And then we get the combination one. Well, you know, let's treat two and three diseases at the same time, give them a knockout, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about the same thing with cleaners, you know, cleaners in your home, or how about these those creams that they have, you know, they have numbers after them. You know, you could have 5 products in one, or 7 products in one, or, hey, how about 9 products in one? And I'm like, no, not me. I'm the queen of singular things. You know, anybody that comes to me gets one thing. They don't get a multivitamin. They might get one vitamin, you know, or they don't get, you know, 10 herbs in a bottle that we're going to concoct just for you. No, how about just taking one? You know, I want to see what it's going to do. And I think that's the same concept in the home we have to really start paying attention to.
Exactly. And it's something that comes about because we kind of overcomplicate things. You know, we feel like, companies need to make money. Like, that's their goal, is to profit. Right. That's why they're there. And so that's why a lot of this stuff comes about, and why there is every year there's a new, better something that completely obliterates the new, better thing from last year. And it's because they constantly have to make money and they constantly have to innovate. In order to do that, they need to find a need. They need to sell you on a need, and they do that by telling you that you're lacking something. So if what you're using is good enough, why would you try something else? So the way advertisers work is that they tell you that you're missing something, or that you're lacking something, or that you're not good enough. And this really does a number on us. And I don't think that you really can feel the impact of it unless you separate yourself from it for a while. Like, if you, I canceled my cable years and years ago, and now when I watch it, and I have those 2-minute commercial breaks and you feel this bombardment of advertisement, it's really overwhelming. Like, you just come out of that 2-minute commercial break feeling like, my hair is not the right color and my house is not clean enough and my carpets are dirty and my kids, like, you know, you just come out with this list of ways that you're not good enough. And it's so hard to live in the face of that. So, I mean, that's the point of this book, is just this, like, and green living was going that way too. And that's something that you touched on too in your intro, was that, you know, it's been around forever. Like we were saying, mm-hmm. our grandmas all did this. They didn't call it being green or eco-friendly. They just called it, you know, using what you had, because they didn't have anything else. But as it's become more trendy, the corporate world has kind of seen this. So there's been a ton of greenwashing, which is, you know, when people decide that they want to make steps towards a more eco-friendly life and they source out products, and they make the effort to source out products that they feel are eco-friendly because they're being marketed that way. And then they find out afterwards that they're not, that they've just slapped, you know, a brown paper label on something and called it natural, and it doesn't mean anything. And that's so frustrating, especially because the green products often cost 2 to 3 times more than a conventional product would, which just doesn't make sense to me. So it's kind of like coming across like green living was something that you can only do if you had tons of time or tons of money, and that's just so opposite from the truth. And so I kind of wanted to pick at that a little bit and show that that wasn't true.
Well, you know, a lot of times, too, people put natural, or they'll put a superfood, or they will put added nutrition, added minerals, whatever those things are, any kind of tagline, or green, or the word healthy. I mean, the word healthy has really been taken through the ringer. I don't even think anybody can define it anymore. And natural also, because if all you needed to do was just to drop in 5 dried blueberries, you could call it a natural product, you know, or natural ingredient.
Or antioxidants or something.
Right. Yeah. And you know, natural ingredients, what do you mean by natural ingredients? I have one. Or natural ingredient, and they don't put the S on it, and people don't even know that. And there's so many, and it is such a misconstrued thing, and it's really, I think eventually it'll all come down toppling, but it really is more power to the people to stop doing it. I really think people say, well, you know, organic food is really expensive in my grocery store, so therefore, I'm going to start growing green peppers, cucumbers, and lettuce in my own yard. Well, if people will stop buying it in the store, then it won't be so expensive anymore, you know, or they'll stop having it. So in other words, we as consumers are really the ones that are perpetuating all of this growth in marketing. And, you know, we're the customer. We're going to buy it. We see it. We think it. We feel it. You know, it ekes into your bones. It comes out of your kid's mouth as, you know, jargon. You know, they have the ring, those, they have the taglines down like nobody's business, the jingles. And you think we as consumers have got to change that first before any change in the marketplace would happen.
And when, I mean, when you get right down to it, it does become simple when you kind of sweep away all the jargon and the excess crap. It does become simple, because what's the advertising budget of fruits and vegetables? Like, think of one major non-government fruit. Like, I couldn't name a fruit and vegetable brand. You know what I mean? Like, the advertising budget is almost nothing, because they don't need to advertise that they're good for you. Everybody knows that. Like, we know that. So if you've got a company or a product that's spending millions of dollars advertising that it's good for you, you kind of have to question, like, well, why? Like, why couldn't I just get this in a fruit and vegetable? Why do I have to have the fruit and vegetable that's been processed and extracted and inserted and infused and then packaged in this plastic bottle and sold back to me? Like, if there's so much effort that has to go into convincing you that something is good, it might bear a second glance. And this applies to home products as well. The ingredients that I use, I always joke that they're on the bottom shelf of the grocery store. Like, you will never find washing soda or borax at eye level at the prime retail spots, because they have no advertising budget. They have no, you know, corporate clout. They're just there like they've always been for 50 or 60 years. And it's, I mean, it's kind of funny, because they work so well and they do what they're supposed to do, but they don't have to spend millions of dollars to prove it, because they just do.
But also, too, I think that comes along with culture and with where we live and things like that. Because right now I live in the New Orleans area, and I will tell you, more people than not, as soon as they put out Epsom salts or borax on the shelf, it's gone. All the other stuff is there, because the people here understand and they know they use it. I mean, Walmart has a joke going, you know, they can't put enough Epsom salts on the shelf. It's always gone. Or same thing with borax, you know, and simple things like that. And, you know, all of the other stuff is always there. So you have to think about, that's another thing about consumer demand. You know, people aren't always looking the newest and the fastest. You know, people are here from Mexico in my area. They don't really care about what Tide can do or their pods or whatever those things are. They're just going to get what they know. And what they know is the simplicity of the things, you know. Or people who are down, you know, very normal, what we would call heavy south, you know. They weren't into all of that newfangled stuff, you know. It's hot here, so what if we sweat? We don't need 24 or 48-hour deodorant. You know, it just doesn't make any difference. And it depends where you're located, where you live, and how much of this eco and green time that you've been exposed to, I think, and, you know, how you grew up.
Yeah, and sticking to something that's a little simpler like that, like if, and this is something that I think overwhelms a lot of people when they try and think about going green. You know, you were saying in your intro that it's this thing that we all think that we should be doing. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be doing that, right, because it's good and I'm supposed to be doing that. But it becomes overwhelming when you look into it, you know. It can almost become a full-time job reading labels and researching ingredients and trying to get through that greenwashing and find out what is what, which is really frustrating for somebody who is genuinely trying to make the right choice and do something good for the environment, and they're sort of getting snuck around by companies who are trying to just profit by doing the same thing they've always done. But an easy way to get away around that is just, yeah, like you're saying, just stick to that simpler thing. Make things yourself rather than relying on companies to buy them. And then you know exactly what's in it. You don't have to be at home researching all these strange scientific names for these bizarre chemical compounds, because you know that this cleaning spray you've got has three ingredients, and there they are in front of you on your counter, and you made them yourself. And that's the way that I kind of found to get around that, because I just found, I honestly felt like it was becoming like a full-time job, being like, okay, well, this spray says it does this, but it has like citrus extract, and is that a good thing, or is that like, it was just, I mean, how do I know? I'm not a scientist. So it was,
you know,
it was
it's
way
so
more
reassuring. Right. I had noticed it the other day. Well, I always noticed it, but I guess I just had voiced it the other day. We were in the grocery store. I said to my husband, I said, we don't even go down any of these aisles anymore. I said, I don't even know what's in there. And he's like, yeah. He said, I can't remember the last time we went in all those aisles, you know. And also coupons. I mean, coupons, you don't get coupons for the really good things that you would
want. Never find,
you know,
coupons for like apples.
Right. So I think the first thing, if you're a coupon person, cut out your coupons. Don't use them anymore, because they're not for anything good. You know, that would
be
the first
cleanse.
Thing.
It's like, don't use anything you can get a coupon for.
Right.
And that'll make you stick to like Whole Foods and like eco-friendly products.
Yeah. And I mean, Whole Foods in our area, you know, there's always a story that they will charge as much as the market will bear. Well, we live in an area where there's only one. So believe me, they are charging what the market will bear, you know, and they are very, 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 very high. But I think, you know, people just have to find alternatives and just say, well, you know, I'll do the best I can, but I certainly don't need to be buying all those boxes and bags. You know, we always talk about, this is the biggest thing, and it kind of goes right to people's faces. They say, well, we know that breast cancer, the compounding broccoli is great for people to help prevent breast cancer, which is sulforaphane. And if you look at it, and then, you know, for people who are eating really crappy, they'll say, oh, I got this great TV dinner that had a little bit of, that had broccoli in it. It said right on, had it on the picture on the front. I put it in the microwave, and so I did my best to prevent breast cancer. And you're shaking your head and you're going, there is not enough there to prevent anything from, not even a mouse, you know, the amount. And second of all, it's frozen. Third of all, it went in your microwave. And by then, you can be guaranteed that there's no value in that whatsoever. And I think we as consumers need to start reversing that and saying, you know, just as well as you're getting rid of your coupons, you might want to get rid of your microwave, because it really has no value to be able to, it, once it zaps things, it changes the formula. Vitamins and nutrition are so important. Right.
We got rid of our microwave when we moved into this house, because there's just no space for it. And we were like, we don't really use it anyways, aside from like maybe heating up tea or something like that. And I've always wondered, does it change the nutritional content of the food that you're heating up?
Well, anytime you change the chemical charge or the energy around something, it will change it. Just like we say with the vitamins on the shelf. Vitamins on the shelf, a lot of them are what we call dead vitamins. They've been there on the shelf forever. They've been squished into tablets. Gosh knows how they've been processed. Same thing with food. You know, you want to get it at the peak of perfection. You don't want to have like right now, we have tomatoes. I looked at them. We live in the South. You would think, great, you know, you still can get good tomatoes. It's still 89 degrees today. Well, the tomatoes are from Canada, and the oranges are from South Africa, you know, mm-hmm. and you know that they could have never been picked at the peak of perfection mm-hmm. to be able to get to me. And you really have to be so conscious of that, and you could say, you know, that's probably not a good choice. And your book is all about choices, you know, make the better choices, you know. Microwave, mm-hmm. you know, is not a good choice. You know, it zaps stuff. Why do you want to use it, you know? Or things like we say cleaners, you know, why do you want to use those? Or when you spray in the bathroom, you're spraying your sink and you're spraying your tub, and all of a sudden you feel like you're going to pass out because of the chemical reaction of the two different sprays. So there's mm-hmm. a problem here. So that's time to really wake up.
Mm-hmm. And then especially when you're turning around and then you're having a bath in that the next day. Or, yeah. you know, you're using laundry detergent on all your clothes. And it's always weirded me out how you can smell the detergent on the clothes, like, days and days and days right. after. Like, when we make our own laundry detergent, but if my husband borrows a shirt from somebody and, you know, mm-hmm. I'll wash it before we give it back to them. And you can still smell that detergent smell even yeah. after, like, two or three washings. And you just wonder, like, that is not natural. Any essential oils that you use, anything natural like that, will dissipate. It'll dissolve, and you won't smell right. it after maybe a day at the most. And it's just kind of wondering, what is that fabric being coated in that fragrance is staying around so long, and what is that then doing to our skin when it's being absorbed?
And, you know, it's so funny because I grew up in the decades where we did, in the Northeast, hang our clothes outside. Even when it was snowing, it didn't matter.
But I know that always happened. Not brave enough in the winter yet.
Yeah, we did those all year round. It was hanging outside. Because they dry just as well because the air is really dry. In fact, sometimes in the winter they dry quicker. But, you know, so all of those times we're trying to recapture something by spraying this or that on our clothes. We're trying to recapture that sense of, you know, crisp fabric, some of a good mm-hmm. smell, of something that's, quote, clean. What does clean even mean anymore? And I think that we have masked that and thought that now the perfumes and the smells is clean, and it's really not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're very, it's funny because North America has become very scent obsessed. Like, we don't like natural yeah. smells, so you don't want to walk into somebody's house and smell cooking or smell. You know, you don't want hair to smell like hair. You want it to smell like flowers or oranges or something. And it's kind of strange. And when you really get away from it, I mean, I don't know if you guys have this where you are, but in a lot of hospitals and office environments here, there'll be signs saying, please don't wear fragrances or artificially right. fragranced products because there's people with sensitivities. And I think more and more people are becoming sensitive to that. But once you stop using those products for a few years, it's been years and years and years since I used shampoo or conditioner or commercial deodorant or anything like that, and I smell fine. I'm not stinky. I'm not like
right.
a stinky person, but I don't have a scent. Like, I don't smell like a brand. My hair doesn't smell like Herbal Essences, and my clothes don't smell like Tide, and my teeth don't smell like Crest.
Right.
I smell like a human being, and it's weird sometimes when if I go to a hotel and I use their shampoo, I have this scent on me all day, and it's kind of unnerving every so often when you turn around and you smell this hair and you think, who is that? And I think when you use it every day, you don't notice that. But if you take yourself away from it and you really strip that and then you go back to it, it really hits you how many fragrances are incorporated into our daily life that you wouldn't even think about. And that's one of the places that a lot of the harmful chemicals in products lie, is in the fragrances, because that's one area that the companies don't have to disclose the ingredients. And that's really worrisome.
You know, it's funny you say that, because if you think about the commercial on TV, well, I don't know if you saw it or not, but it always says, have you become nose blind? And that's true. You know, have we become nose blind, you know, or have we become nose snobs, you know? in the 90s, oh, that was the explosion of great fragrances, and you had to decide, were you going to smell like an expensive smell, or were you going to be a cheap smell? And people walk around and they would say, oh, dime store, oh, maybe, you know, an expensive smell, and everybody would clamor to get the expensive smell. And that was just something so crazy, and now you are starting to notice people going the opposite way, where fragrances are not what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how we all circle around, right? It's sort of like everything becomes popular for a while, and then just this real wears off, and we're kind of left wondering why we did that in the first place, and that maybe the other way was better and didn't need to be improved upon. But it's all about kind of figuring out where you want to be.
You know, it's funny you say in your book about the you say about the plants that clean the air. I had had a client who had come from England to visit me for some help, and she would always say, you know, she opened up the windows in her office, and I said, well, you need to put, and she said it would kind of smell outside, and she wouldn't feel good when she was at work. So I said, well, line all of those windows with plants. Mm-hmm. In a little while, a few weeks later, she called me back. Well, that didn't work because all the plants died. I guess I don't have a green thumb. I says, no, you're just not listening. The air was getting cleaned by the plants, and it's dying. Now do you understand it? And she went, oh, I never in a million years thought that that was the reason. So now she just puts a ton more plants, and as they die, throws them out and does not try to revive them, just pitches them and gets more. You know, so a lot of people who are saying, oh, I can't grow anything inside. But let me tell you, the peace lily is one of the greatest ones for cleaning the inside air. And if it seems like it's getting droopy and not working, what you do is you take it, you put it in your shower, run your warm water on it for about 5 minutes, shut it off, shut the door to the shower, leave it there for 24 hours, come back. If it survived, okay, it just needed more humidity. But other than that, if it's still saggy, it goes out. So that's just the rules of trying to think. You know, is my plant doing the job it's supposed to be doing? Because it's not always about me.
Yeah, it might be the canary in the coal mine that's kind of alerting you to other issues.
Right, right. And people just don't even look beyond that, you know.
It's nice to have a reason that it's not maybe the black thumb of death.
Yeah. It might be something else.
But it's kind of good to say then because you feel good that you're paying attention. And I think that's really the biggest thing your book is all about is pay attention. Almost every page you turn on, you say, listen. And you're almost like ding the dong on every page because that's what you have to notice about is this good, is this not good? I don't know, you know. And you can say it a million different ways till people get it, but that's just what we're all here for is saying it a million different ways until they understand less is better in all realms of our life.
And that, I think the message, too, was to say it in a way that would be receptive. And so I tried to say it in a way that would be funny because I think sometimes this is one of those issues that becomes, it can become a chore or it can become something that seems quite insurmountable when you think about the magnitude of what we're facing, and you talk about the giant floating garbage patches and the landfills, and you know, you walk down the street on garbage day, and some people have, you know, three or four huge bags of garbage that they're putting outside, and you're thinking, oh my God, like, what am I really doing? So I wanted to approach it in a way that was really funny and that these things would be really easy, simple things to do. This doesn't mean you have to overhaul your life and give up your car and give up your fridge and live like a monk with one spoon and one fork. These are just really simple changes that you can make to your everyday life that are fairly innocuous. You know, the hardest part is just getting started, really, because you have to kind of figure out where you want to start and what you're going to do, and there's so many options, and that can kind of get overwhelming. But if you start and you have success where you started and you actually keep going, it's so easy. Like, it honestly is just so simple, and it's something that becomes a point of pride in your life because you're empowered. You're actually creating something, which is something that we don't really do that often anymore. We don't make our own clothes. A lot of us don't grow our own food. You know, we work, but our work isn't tangible. You don't stand back at the end of the day and think, I built that house. You know, it's like computer work where you might have a file that you sent, but it's really hard to grasp that feeling of accomplishment. And you can get that back in a small kind of dorky way by making your own laundry detergent or making your own face scrub instead of buying it. And it's just a way to reclaim that power and to kind of, you're not just a consumer. You can be a creator too.
Yeah, and being able to say that there are things you have to change. You know, there's so many times people will say, but I bought everything already prepared, you know, or I have everything already ready to go, just like these combination things that we're talking about. You know, and it's so funny, and it really stood out to some people that were kind of very resistant to listening. And they would say, what did you have to eat today? And I'll say, I had an egg for breakfast, a potato for lunch, and a sweet potato for lunch, and I had spinach and mushrooms for dinner. And they're like, what? Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't tell me what you had to eat today. Yes, I did. I didn't have anything on them, and I didn't have anything extra. And they just couldn't conceive of that idea. You know, so when you say to them, you know, you're going to wash your hair with baking soda and vinegar, and they're like, what? You know, the concept that it's just not this prepared, right, this big prepared entourage with all these fancy names and bells and whistles, it just is not something of their language.
Mm-hmm. And something that I was talking about with somebody else that has really stuck with me was that we're obsessed with saving time, and that's an important thing because often we don't have enough time, especially if we're working or if we've got young children. Everyone's so busy. But to ask, what are you saving the time for? And so when you're taking these shortcuts, and a lot of the time they're shortcuts that impact our health. You know, we don't have time to exercise, we don't have time to eat right, we don't have time to make our own products. But what are you saving that time for? And a lot of the time, the answer is TV. We just like to sit and kind of shut off in front of the TV. And you know, everybody makes their own choices, and that's, I love a good show every so often as well. But when you're looking at the impact it has in your life. And it's one of those things where you ask yourself, like, how do I feel after that? How do I feel after watching 3 hours of TV versus how I feel after creating something or doing something positive or working in a garden for an hour in the sun? And just not feeling like you have to make these changes because of outside pressure, but actually looking at your own life and asking yourself, do I enjoy this? Or am I just shutting myself off because I need that? And just reconnecting and figuring out what you actually enjoy, because it might surprise you.
You know, it was funny. I can remember, I think it was probably about a year ago, we were at the grocery store, and I couldn't understand it, but all of a sudden, all of the cashiers and the manager went running out after this woman in the parking lot. And I couldn't figure out why, because I really wasn't paying attention. And they brought her back in, and what had happened is that she had brought her own bags for the groceries, and she had all her things in it. And after she went through, she puts them in the bags, and everybody thought that she stole all the food because she didn't have their bags.
Oh.
You know, and you just
criminal
go, wow.
Hippies.
And they embarrassed the dickens out of this woman by going through every single one of her bags and re-ringing it and everything. And it was like, really? You know, and I can tell you that, you know, that policy is still the same and enforced at the store. They are still giving out all the plastic and everything. And, you know, if you bring your own bags, they are going to check them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've definitely had, because I try not to ever use plastic bags. I won't say never, because nobody's perfect. But especially for little, we don't realize how, you know, you go to the pharmacy and you pick up one thing, they automatically put it into a bag and you leave. But, I mean, it's like a box of aspirin. What do you need a bag for?
Uh-huh.
So I hardly ever get bags, and I'm constantly walking out of stores with arms full of merchandise and a receipt in my hand. And I do wonder sometimes, like, that's why I always keep the receipt out, because I feel like, you know, I'm literally just wandering out with these arms on, get these weird looks from people. But, like, the way I think of it is that if I can carry it in two hands, I'm carrying it without a bag. Like, I don't need a bag to carry that. So, you definitely sort of bring some excitement into your life. Pretend that you're shoplifting. Don't use a bag.
And I'll tell you, it is very common to be able to say that, you know. They will do that. They will stop you no matter what, you know. And unless you've really got a city ordinance or a mandate, you're going to have those issues. So the best thing to do is just try to do the best you can in the areas that you're in. So let's talk about a few things. You talk a lot about, about the cleaners and things like that. But then you also talk about some different things in your book. You know, you really have to be careful about, you know, you want to be able to plant around your house. And you talk about clotheslines and rain barrels. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because those are two concepts where I'm telling you, depends what age group you're in, whether or not you know what those words mean.
My life totally changed when I got my clothesline, and it sounds so ridiculous, but it's one of my favorite things. And we just moved into a house, and I have a drying rack, and I'm like crossing my fingers and just waiting until we can get a clothesline installed at the beginning of next spring. But it's one of those things that I sort of took on feeling like, okay, I will do this because I know it's better for the environment. Dryers are one of our hugest energy sucks. They're incredibly inefficient, and there's no way that they can become more efficient because all they're doing is they're blowing hot air and they're tumbling, and that's all they're doing. And it wastes an enormous amount of energy, which costs you a lot of money on your electrical, especially if you've got a large family and you're doing lots of clothes laundry. So if you've got a clothesline, you string it up at the longest point in your backyard, and it does not take that much time. This was one of my misconceptions, was I thought it was going to take ages. But it takes longer than throwing everything in the dryer, but not much longer. You go outside, you clip everything onto the clothesline. Not only are you saving energy and it's, you know, saving the environment that way, you're saving money on your electrical bill, but it's actually really nice. Like, you're not hanging clothes in gross, rainy, cold weather. You're hanging clothes on sunny spring days, warm summer days, days where there's a nice breeze. You get outside. It's transforming a chore into something that you can actually enjoy. And I remember stepping back after the first time I did this, and my arms were a little bit sore from hanging things, but not in a bad way, just kind of in a way that I'd worked. And I stood back and I surveyed my work, and everything was nicely flapping on the breeze. And I just felt, it just felt simpler, and it felt better than hurriedly tossing everything into the dryer and pressing go and then rushing on to the next thing. It was something I couldn't rush. I had to pin each each item as I hung it up, and I had to do that. There was no way to rush it. And so it was almost like a little meditation in the middle of my day. And honestly, it was something I really, really looked forward to. And I'm not a laundry person. Right. Like, laundry is not my favorite activity. So that was something that I was just surprised with. And I feel like there can be more of that, of bringing that sense of peace or stillness or reflection into everyday chores. And it's not like every day is a zen garden. I mean, we're all busy and crazy, and my life is like that too, which is why those moments are important. And your world is not going to fall apart if you take 15 minutes to hang your laundry, right? And then rain barrels is such a passive thing. It's the opposite. You don't have to take any energy at all aside from finding a rain barrel, which you could purchase them. There's kits that are available at most hardware stores. It's generally like a huge vessel with an intake at the top that you can either just leave it open and collect rain like that, or most people collect it from their downspouts. And you collect rain that way, and then you can use it to water your lawn, or you can use it to water your garden. And that way you're not wasting. I mean, we've all seen when it rains, the storm drains are just overflowing, and then a week later it's so dry your lawn is like dying. This is kind of a way to save the water from the rainy days and use it on the dry days. It's a great way to actually save water and to make your plants a little healthier too with the rainwater.
You know, and also too, you talk about, you know, health and wellness. I know when, remember, I don't know if you remember, but a long time ago they used to have what we call medicine cabinets behind the mirror in your bathroom.
Mm-hmm. No, I've got one, yeah.
Yeah, and people would have all of these bottles and stuff in there and everything, you know, a remedy for a cough, one for a drippy nose, one for red eyes, one for this, one for that and everything. And, you know, we don't have one here at my house, and I really thought about that the other day, and I said, you know, I really don't have any of those things at all. You know, when I was reading your book, I said, I really don't have any of those types of things. And it's so incredible to be able to think you just don't even buy those things, you know, that they're just not even a part of your life anymore, anything like that, you know?
And there's so many alternatives to them. Part of the biggest message, I think, in this book is just to reduce, and that comes out in the title, All You Need Is Less. And so the first step in any of this is to reduce and ask yourself if you need something in the first place. So being green is not necessarily about going out and purchasing green products, but asking yourself if you need those products in the first place. And that's applicable everywhere, from the clothes you buy to, you know, to the cleaning products and to stuff like home remedies. Is it the worst thing in the world if you have a runny nose? Could you use a neti pot instead, which I talk about in the book? Or you know, when your body hurts, it's a symptom of something. And rather than trying to erase that pain, perhaps we could look at where the pain's coming from, and maybe there's some environmental triggers or some diet triggers or an underlying issue that we might be ignoring because we're just trying to get rid of the symptom rather than addressing the problem. And so, yeah, the first step is just reducing. Reduce the amount that you buy. It reduces the clutter in your house. It reduces your stress. It reduces the amount of money you're spending, too. And then reduces the amount of stuff you have to throw out when it's expired or you don't use it anymore or you don't like it or it breaks.
You know, it's really interesting, too. We talk about kids. Let's talk about that for a second. You know, I go to some people's houses, and I never saw so many toys in my whole life. I mean, I have four kids, and there's no reason you need five different bouncy chairs and something else to sit on and then something else that has a rock, and maybe you can count one, two, three while it, you know, it does this, that, or the other. It's like, there's so many toys that these kids have nowadays that are absolutely incredible. It's like that is a huge money drain on people, and people say it's so expensive to have kids. Well, that's a really good start there to wean that out. But then also you think about, what are you cleaning them with, or are you cleaning them? Some people aren't. And then you wonder about, you know, then you start getting all the things to make your kids smell good or to clean this, that, or the other out of their clothes. Well, hey, maybe they should, you know, don't have to worry about cleaning the red dye number, whatever it is, out of their shirt, because maybe they shouldn't be eating red dye, whatever, in the first place, you know? So really it's going to take us a whole full circle. I think that's really great to look at children, you know, I mean, look at the circle that's going on there.
Yeah, and the goal is not to deprive them. I mean, kids are kids, and you know, I don't want to be a person who's like, your kids shouldn't have toys, and they should have one pair, you know, one set of wooden blocks, and that's it. But if you, part of the objection, so I think a lot of people would like to support more environmentally friendly children's toy companies, but they say it's too expensive. You look at, you know, a wooden rocker versus a plastic rocker, and it's four times the price. And that's totally true. And there's a reason for that, because likely an actual person had to make that wooden rocker. It comes from a natural material. It can't just be, you know, created in a lab and stamped out 18 models per second. But it's also going to last for probably 50 or 60 years. I mean, how many antique rocking chairs have you, or rocking horses have you seen? They last so much longer than these plastic ones that'll crack. And a way to get around that expense, because I don't want anyone to bankrupt themselves to live an eco-friendly lifestyle. And my suggestions are always buy the best that you can afford. And you know what you can afford. But if you cut out plastic toys, and I know this is drastic, but I also know that it can be done, because I have a 2-year-old daughter and she has very, very few plastic toys, and the ones she has, she's been given. You know, and they could probably fit, you know, in one hand or something. But if you cut out plastic, you're cutting out 95% of most toy stores, which sounds horrible at first, but then you realize that instead of buying four toys, you're buying one really, really good one, and you're buying one that's not going to off-gas and have that weird plastic smell. It's not going to break in a month. It's not going to sit in a landfill for hundreds of thousands of years after she's done playing with it. It's going to last, and when you're done with it, you could sell it to somebody else, or you could donate, and you're not going to have to worry about the effects of it. So reducing isn't necessarily depriving yourself. It's freeing yourself. You don't have to have a house filled with clutter, because your selections are literally so limited when you don't buy plastic that you can afford to buy better toys, because you're only buying a few of them. And I've done research into this because I really worry about being, I don't want my values to come above Olive's well-being, my daughter. So when I was looking at her toy room compared to her friend's toy room, and she would always get excited to go over and play with their toys, and I would think, am I depriving her? Like, am I putting my need to be, you know, a hippie, eco-friendly parent over her need to have fun and play? Because that's so important. Like, that's their work, is to play. And the more I read about it, the more I realize that kids play better with fewer toys. They develop more imaginative play. They develop more creative play. They play more thoroughly with the toys. Like, they don't just play with it for 5 seconds and then move on to something else. So the more I read into it, the more I'm like, this is a good way to go. It's less stress for me. It's less cost. It's less chaos around Christmas, because people feel like they could get her an experience. So they got her, you know, tickets to go to the zoo or something like that, or paying for her swimming lessons rather than buying her this thing that we now have to store.
Well, I can tell you, my kids, my four kids now are 23 to 33. And they have very little in the way of toys, because it just wasn't around then. It just wasn't necessary. We moved quite a bit, and we just didn't do it. But they always did do sports or something like that. My daughter would do gymnastics for a year. She'd swim for a year. She'd do this, you know, she'd do different things all along, racquetball for a year. The boys would be doing ice hockey or, you know, whatever it might be. But the point was is that when they were in the house, they really didn't think about toys or anything, because the only reason they were in the house was either to eat or to go to sleep. And that was probably mm-hmm. about it. So I guess it's all really about how you decide to raise your kids or whatnot. But I can say now that my kids are in their 20s and 30s, when they have other relatives or other friends who have little kids, they will never. I have never, ever seen them buy any toys for any of them. They've only bought them books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my daughter even
said, fantastic gift for kids.
Yeah, my daughter says, you know, I've never bought her a toy. I don't, you know, for one of her nieces. She says, I've never bought her a toy. I've only bought her books, you know. And that's it. And we carry our books around when we move, you know. And
mm-hmm.
that's pretty much about it. So people really, you have to decide what the value is, you know. Even when I work with children that have autism, you know, and we suggest that the parents, you know, take away sugar and dyes and prepared foods in certain areas. And the mother would say, what am I going to do about birthday? They have to have a birthday cake. Well, really, that concept of a birthday cake is what you're choosing to put on your child. Not everybody has a birthday cake. Not everybody has to have a birthday cake. My kids never had birthday cakes because they didn't, you know, they just didn't eat sweet stuff. It just was the way it was. But if you ask other women now that have children with ADD or ADHD, they're like, no, we don't really have birthday cakes either. We're just doing other things. It's just, if you can just change your views and your values around it, you'll see how freeing that would be.
Mm-hmm. And what a great conversation to have with your kids if they're old enough to talk about that,
mm-hmm.
about why you're not doing that. Like my daughter's 2 now, and she's very verbal, and so we can have conversations now. And it's interesting to see her understand, like when we go to a store and she sees something she really likes, she's allowed carrying it around with her the whole time during the store, you know, go for it, carry that puppy or that doll or whatever. But she knows that when we leave, she has to say goodbye to it, and we say that because you have enough toys at home, we don't need this. It's an opportunity for a conversation. It doesn't just have to be this authoritative,
right.
No, this is what I've decided. It's an opportunity to talk about why we don't buy plastic, or why aren't you having a cake, or why is fruit better, or, you know, these are lessons that we're teaching our kids, and they learn so much more by what we do than what we're explicitly teaching them. And so it's, if we're constantly saying, you know, fruit and vegetables are good for you, fruit and vegetables are good for you, but on every special occasion, you're getting a
mm-hmm.
treat that's not fruit and vegetables, like, obviously that's
right.
not the best thing, because that's not what we're doing. And, I mean, the internet is a fabulous resource for this. Like, I was one of those mean moms who my daughter didn't have any sugar until her first birthday. And I think I even baked her, like, a healthy cake that didn't have, I'm trying to remember, I think it had like cream cheese frosting and had something else. It had sprinkles on it, which was my one concession. But I'm still like that, and I still have people who are like, that's, you know, she's just a kid. Let her be a kid. Why can't she watch cartoons and have candy? And
mm-hmm.
it's kind of sad that that's become conflated with childhood, because I think childhood is a time to really practice your imagination and develop healthy habits for the future. And that doesn't mean it doesn't have to be fun, and it doesn't mean it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't mean that she's living this really deprived existence, but she's living a life that she knows can be fun and healthy and be good for the environment too.
You know, it's so funny you say about being a kid. They're defining a child as candy and cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so are you saying that myself or people older than myself were deprived children? Then they'd be, no, why? And I'll say, well, we didn't watch cartoons because there weren't any on TV. And
mm-hmm.
furthermore, we didn't really have candy because, you know, I lived out, you know, in the rural area. So were we deprived? No. It's just what we were exposed to, and that was which society had put upon us. And I really think that's a lot of information about your book, is like, what is society and marketing really putting upon us that we believe we need to fit into?
Mm-hmm. And just questioning that. And that's mm-hmm. why the book offers a lot of options. It's not a Bible. I'm not saying do this and then do this and then throw out this.
Right.
It's asking questions like, do you need this? Maybe try going without dryer sheets for a week and see if you like it. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, try this and see what you think. Because it's just asking those questions and giving yourself those options. Because you might realize that you don't need half the stuff you're using, and you're just buying it because your mom always bought paper towel, so you buy paper towel. But do you really
yeah.
need it? Like, could you use a cloth instead? And those are things that I think it's just important to question them.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. You know, I had a friend, and she was getting ready to leave work in the one morning, and I was just waiting until she got ready, and she says, wait a second, I got to turn everything on. And I didn't really understand what she meant. And I watched her, and she turned on her dishwasher. She turned on her slow cooker on the counter. She turned on her washer and her dryer and her Roomba. She's got all of this stuff going while she got to work. And I'm thinking, my goodness, you know? And it's like, it was just fathomable, you know? Here's your electric meter spinning like nobody's business, and you're not even home, you know, for hours on end. So we have to really think about what we do need and what we don't need, you know? And it is a conversation that a lot of people will have. I think eventually, I don't think all these answers are going to bring us full range back into living like Amish people like we used
to.
You know, but I think that might in maybe two or three generations from now. They don't have to right now, but it is an idea that you should think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the idea is not, I'm not a Luddite. I love my computer. I love my modern conveniences. I don't want to give up my fridge or my car or my heat in my house or anything like that. The goal is to not do that, but I think you can have huge, huge impacts by changing very small things in your daily life, and those changes add up so quickly that you'd be astounded. I mean, even just choosing to compost will reduce your garbage by like 50 to 70%. And that's such a huge, incredible thing that you can do. And it really doesn't take that much time or effort. So don't feel like you have to overhaul your entire life. These are just small things that you can tackle once every month, you know, change one thing every month or one thing every week. And it doesn't need to be complicated when you do it that way.
Yeah, I think it's just all about trying to, as you said, just do one thing at a time, because it's all about habits. You're going to change your habits, and that does take a while. You do too many at once, you're going to give up. You know, a lot of people become frustrated with it, and they say, this is more work than my regular job, and we don't really want to do that. We just want to be able to do a little bit at a time. Well, you know, Madeline, we've come to the end of this time. It has been, we've gone right through, see? Just keep on going. Well, it was a pleasure to have you with us. Would you like to share with the listeners more about your website and your book and where they could purchase that? That would be great.
I'd love to. I maintain a personal blog that you can find at sweetmadeline.ca because I'm up here in Canada. And the blog for my book is called allyouneedislove.ca. And for anyone who wants to find a copy, it's available at all the big guys like Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Chapters or Target. But I always encourage people, if they can, to go find a local bookstore. If they don't have it, they can order it in for you, and that would really help them out. And I really support you know, sourcing things locally when you can. And if you feel ridiculous buying something, I was talking about not buying things, then you can also get it on a Kindle version, and there's an audiobook version as well.
Well, it was a pleasure to have you with us today. I think we've given them a lot of tips and a lot of things to say, you know, just take one thing at a time, and know you're not going to be weird because, hey, we've probably been doing it or have done it before, right?
Yeah, join us. Be laughed at. It's a good time.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've had such fun chatting with you.
Thank you so much. If you'd like to find out more information about Madeline Somerville, her book is All You Need Is Less, The Eco-Friendly Guide to Guilt-Free Green Living and Stress-Free Simplicity. Please do check out her website. It is on the bottom of today's show page description, and you can click on there and go directly to her webpage. And thank you so much for joining us on Sedona Talk Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Please do check out our other shows. There's over 200 on archives. And please do feel free to post a comment. And thank you so much for joining us. And until tomorrow, have a wonderful day. Thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. It has been a pleasure to be with you, and we hope you found more information that will be able to make your life just a little bit easier. You know, it's not an easy trip all the time in this life, and sometimes we say, you know, if I could just maybe hear it from somebody else, or maybe hear that someone else's story might be similar to mine, or maybe just gain a few extra tips to make my journey a little bit easier. Please join us on Health Blast Radio every day for the year 2015, where we will be having so many different practitioners, all kinds of authors, just regular people like you and I, having a casual conversation about a different topic almost every day. Check out our website for more information on the Women Over Age 50 group. It is drjeanettegallagher.com. You can always just Google my name, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and you will find out so much more information about upcoming radio shows, about other websites I have, other programs we are currently doing. And if you just need help, please pick any of the websites, any of the links, and send me a private message. Thank you so much for joining us today on Health Blast Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure, and please, just in the morning, before you reach for that cell phone or the television remote or even your glasses, open your eyes and say, thank you, God, for another day. It's been a pleasure. And have a great day.